Okay, this is episode five of Long Arm Stapler, a podcast about zines. Today we are joined by.
Hello, I'm Poliana Irizarry.
Welcome to my couch.
Yeah, this is a nice couch.
This is my recording studio. So, do you want to tell everyone a little bit about your experience with zines and, like, because you've got a lot.
Yeah, so I'm really old, and I've been doing zine stuff for a really long time. So back in the Riot Girl 90s, I guess, I got into zines as a high school / college student. I lived within walking distance from the Inwood Theater in Dallas, Texas. The longstanding zine Musea was freely available in the lobby because Tom Hendricks, I think his name is like, Art S. Revolutionary, worked there and would just give away his zines for free. And I was like, this is the coolest. And then I realized that the stuff I'd seen like at shows, those were also zines. I didn't really make the connection about like what zines were until kind of encountering them a couple of times. And I tried to make my own zine. This was back in like 1997, 98, about the Dallas, Texas, late 90s punk scene. I was very influenced by Buzzmonger fanzine, which is still one of my favorite zines ever, especially about music and interviews and bands and touring and like a local scene. And then I realized that the zine I wanted to make was Buzzmonger, and I kind of got frustrated like with technical difficulties, like my computer crashing and trying to transcribe interviews and stuff that I did. I was like 19, maybe 20. So fast forward to like, I finally finished like 10 years. I finally finished college and then grad school, and I make my first zine. I'm living in Philadelphia, and there was the Philly Zine Fest at the Rotunda. I want to say this was 2008, 2007. That zine fest has been going on for over a decade, so it was like maybe the third or so year. I went and I brought my zines to trade. No, wait, the first year I went, I just went and like I was like, I have $50. And I spent them all very quickly. But I came home with like this huge tote bag full of zines. Well, a regular size tote bag, but it was pretty full. And then the next year, one of the organizers I met at Wooden Shoe Books, Sawyer, was trying to convince me to table. And I was like, no. So instead, I just walked around trading zines. And I made, I think, I want to say like 30 copies. And everyone I asked to trade, almost everyone traded me. It was amazing. I came home with like more zines than the year before. I didn't spend any money because I just thought that was the coolest thing. I'm really into not spending money, like defeating capitalism by being a broke ass. So like I was hooked. And that's kind of been my motivator ever since. I tabled the year after, and I sat next to Raquel Solomon, Sis Tress, the child empress. What a great, and just made friends, and we talked zines, and we talked shit on Philly, and it was great. And so I've been, I guess it's been about 10 years since that experience now, 11 years, something like that.
And now you're doing really big things in the San Jose DIY community.
Yeah, I moved to San Jose from Philadelphia about 4 years ago. And I was like, okay, I'm here now. I want to find out where the punk shows are at and where the zine people are at. And
you found both.
I found both in this wonderful community DIY collective called Think and Die Thinking. They were a longstanding group of San Jose locals and their friends and comrades who organized amazing DIY shows, the Think and Die Thinking Festival, which
is where I first encountered zines.
Yes,
in the wild.
So many people say that Think and Die Thinking was their first time to see zines, and I just think that's wonderful because, first of all, Think and Die Thinking Festival was put together to uplift and highlight and feature the voices of people of color, especially queer people of color and the LGBTQ community. So there's intersecting identities of people of color and LGBTQ people, especially in youth. It was very important for it to be all ages, for it to be safe space and feminist and to be trans inclusive and to uplift voices of color, which all of those things are incredible and was rare enough to see just one aspect of identity focused on any kind of group. But for this collective to just fucking demand all of that is important. All of these things that we are part of are important, and we're going to focus on that. So the bands that were there were all a part of this mindset. And then the zines, there was a zine swap. There was a Summer of Discontent zine swap and like a writing process where we all met up. If you wanted to be part of that, everyone met up a couple of times over the summer. And then at the end of summer, we had a swap at SB Debug, Silicon Valley Debug. The 2015 Think and Die Thinking, which ended up being the last festival, but I volunteered to help out, and I am so, so grateful, so fortunate that Bean and everybody else from T80T Collective let me help out with the zine stuff. We organized the zine library on the second floor of the Billy DeFrank Center, which is the LGBTQ center in San Jose. And we also organized different zine readings. And it was a really great idea from years before that there was an open mic always on the stage so that people could do slam poetry, zine readings, poetry readings, or just speak their mind in between acts. And while the bands were setting up, and it was only used a couple of times, I think, outside of the readings. But I think the year before, it was definitely more of a part of the festival. So in order to encourage that, we scheduled the zine readings in between the bands, which I think also opened up a lot of people's minds and eyes and ears to zines in the DIY punk community. And then also people who were zinesters, you couldn't just like hide upstairs all day if you wanted to see a zine reading or go look at the zines that are for sale or for trade in the main festival area. You needed to watch the bands too. So I just thought it was a really great idea. It was kind of like taking the Riot Girl, which was very exclusive and cliquish, taking that aspect of zines and flipping it on its head and making it inclusive and accessible. And I don't know, I love it. And it's working with zinesters in San Jose and in the entire Bay Area, but San Jose and the South Bay and specifically has just enriched my life.
And that's where I think we actually met. Yes. Was that Think and Die Thinking. And that's when I did my first reading. And I couldn't finish it, and I, like, cried and, like, ran off I wasn't on stage. I was just, like, in front of the stage, and I just, like, started crying and ran away.
First of all, I don't remember that was your first reading.
Yeah.
I wish there was a camera here. You could see my face. That was Maris, their first reading. Second of all, I don't remember you crying and running away. No, not at all. I remember that you spoke very passionately, and then it seemed to me like you had finished and then you'd exited stage quickly, not as in you, like, you know, couldn't finish. If you stopped naturally.
Okay, I finished, like, what I wanted to read. I was reading a piece from probably my heaviest zine. Mm-hmm. It was about, like, sexual assault and, mm-hmm. like, trauma and being trans. Yeah, and that was... I was really set on, like, reading that piece And I got really inspired by like all the other readers, and I was like, yeah, I can do this. And then I did it.
You did it.
And I've cried at most readings since then.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's hard to like really talk about personal stuff and like read it and kind of not, because when you're doing a reading, it's like not really a dialogue. It's more, here are my feelings. Let me throw them at you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just kind of like wait. So it's hard to be vulnerable in that kind of space without crying, at least for me.
I think that everybody who read over that festival, 3-day festival, are some of the most brave, courageous, incredible, powerful people I've ever encountered. I'm an Aquarius. I'm a quadruple Aquarius. I know a lot of people, but I don't have a lot of friends. And the people that I met from that fest, I still keep in touch with and still like hold dearly. And it's because we got so vulnerable. I cried so often, so much. And there was like kind of a joke amongst the organizers that, oh, it's you're not really a thinking, not thinking unless you're crying. And how many times have you cried today, you know? Because that space was intended to be therapeutic, vulnerable, emotional. It was an intentional safe space. How successful that is for each individual, but it depends on the individual. Your mileage may vary, but the intentionality was that it was created so that we could have the space to process with our family, with our community. And I think for me, it was very successful in that because, yeah, I definitely cried. I read as well. I was very hesitant to read, and I waited because as an organizer, I kind of felt like, okay, also, first of all, I'm not from San Jose. San Jose is under rapid gentrification. The entire Bay Area is. There are a lot of people that are coming into these cities, such as myself, who are not from there and taking leadership roles. I think that the best usage of my talents and time and skills and experience is to utilize those to uplift local voices, period. So that being said, when someone was unable to read, when we had somebody bow out, I was encouraged to read. And so I did. That's how I play it. So I read, I cried afterwards, and I had several people walk up to me and thank me. And I was like, the fuck?
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I always think of my zines as kind of like, I wrote this thing so that I created this document, this thing, so that I can trick you into trading me yours. That's just like my mental illness, like manifesting as like self-loathing. And I know it's not true. I mean, I write a lot and I reread it. And I edit it. And I work really hard. They're not bad. I'm proud of most of them, but I hadn't read until I got to California. I had read one time. The responses are amazing. Yet that whole thing of being vulnerable and then sharing your work and then waiting.
Yeah.
It's not a conversation. It's, I hesitate to say performance, but it's kind of how it feels. Like you have to practice it in order for it to feel right. And then the people that like, whoa, they're really good, kind of have that like actor thing going where they're like,
they're in the zone.
Yeah, they're like reciting poetry or whatever they're writing, but it's like storytelling. The narrative is engaging, not like lots of ums. People practice and say important things. So, yeah, I want to be like that, sure, but then I kind of also don't want to.
A lot of times, if I like read, it'll be something that I wrote and haven't gone back to since I like sent out the zine. And so sometimes it's kind of a surprise to me.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh wait, yeah, I wrote that. Oh, time to cry.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you were saying, it's weird. It feels weird to me when people come up and like thank me. Like it's cool because it's like I'm being really vulnerable and I'm letting them in, and sometimes they're going through like similar shit. And so I guess they're thanking me for, like, I don't know, having someone to, like, relate to. But it also always is, like, overwhelming. And I'm like, thanks for what? Like, I didn't do anything. I just cried. But I do understand the, like, emotional labor that comes with that and reading. And I feel like when I read, I'm giving a lot. And a lot of people, when they read, are giving a lot of themselves mm-hmm. to the audience and the listeners. And that feels really powerful. I always feel really good after I read.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily feel good while I'm doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not really an enjoyable activity to be on a stage or in front of the microphone reading my work, usually. I think, for me, I oscillate between just kind of like neurotic observances, neurotic observations about the minutiae in my life, or really heavy, deep, introspective, like literally like I'm in crisis and writing about it. So I wonder if maybe I wrote like powerful, uplifting stuff. Maybe I could be one of those like motivational speakers. Like in my dreams, I am cooler than DJ Khaled, and I am telling everybody, like, I'm just like a cheerleader. I'm like a zine cheerleader, but
in real life or in your dreams? Because you're that in real life.
Okay, well, I want to be that, but in like I don't know, I guess the kids are calling it a brand.
Okay.
Yeah, I want that to like to be my thing. And I do so I do that kind of like I'm on my way to being that because this is all coming together. It's all coming together. The way that I look at zine events and zine readings especially is that I want to once again leverage my experience and my own emotional vulnerability, I was gonna say illness, but etc. To create a space to work on creating a space so that my community can also do the same and find that freedom, find that that emotional release and just fucking get free. So like there's the trade-off. The trade-off is I have to do it too. But I enjoy the after effects as well. Yeah. The talking and the, I really like compliments.
Yeah.
Compliments are nice, especially a compliment on my writing. That's the best. Like, I don't necessarily love my writing, but I want to. And I want to love my writing so much that I got a degree in writing. But,
same.
Right?
I'm just like,
yeah.
I know I can write. I don't know.
You're a fantastic writer.
Look who's talking.
Exactly. Well, thank you.
Thank you. I don't mean to, I feel like whenever somebody compliments me, I'm just like right back at you, like immediately. And it's not like I do take it in. Thank you. You are also a wonderful writer.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. I totally interrupted you.
No, I was winding down. I think, I don't know. So this is my first ever podcast.
So after Thinking by Thinking.
Yes.
You got in. So you're like a big time zine fest organizer now.
I am. Now a small time. No, you know what? So what happened was Thinking by Thinking, their collective wrapped up, ceased to exist. They came to a conclusion. The reason being that several of them moved away. There were also some there's always interpersonal drama, etc. But the Zinesters are still there and many of the people are still there, and we wanted a zine fest.
In San Jose.
Luckily, the brilliant genius Ivy Adams was part of this art collective in downtown San Jose. They converted an old department store, an old Ross, into an impromptu art gallery. We thought it was like a community run space that turned out to not necessarily be the truthiest truth. In any case, Ivy had access to this huge space and the desire to have a fest. She called it San Jose ZineCon because San Jose, in fact, this is Fanime May weekend. San Jose has lots of conventions of like-minded artists and writers and fans of different fandoms.
You can say weebs. It's fine.
And weebs. Lots of weebs. I actually learned the term weeb from Fanime. Listen, I live my life a quarter mile at a time. I don't have friends. I have Fanime. Thank you. I'm so glad I got to use that joke. Thank you. So she put out the call. Hey, who's going to help me organize this? And I'm like, hey, I can help. And so we got a whole bunch of people together. Lee Patron of Cheers from the Wasteland and Eric Sons, who also edits that journal zine, online zine, and also regular zine, paper zine, Dear Hometown. Everyone pick it up. It's amazing. And Saoirse Alessandro also helped. And B and, oh, I'm starting to name people. I'm going to forget everyone and embarrass myself. Crystal Olivas and Deanna Hernandez and a bunch of us. There were more. I forgot. I'm sorry. Eli Wenig. A lot of us helped out and did the first San Jose ZineCon on a shoestring budget. That was February 2017. It ended up being over 100 people, over 100 tablers. We had people from all over California come up. We started off huge because we had this access to a huge space. And then it was like, well, we have this huge space that's free. All we have to do is pay for tables and chairs. Well, really, if you bring your own table and chair, then it can be free. So we made it sliding scale, donation-based, and ended up raising money because we made a profit. And so we donated to Translegal Center, Billy DeFrank Center, a couple other places. And it was tight because it was sliding scale and free for many people. Some zine fests in the Bay Area and actually in California as a whole. I know that some zine fests cost $45 for a half table. Some are sliding scale, donation-based. You know, I just want everything to be free for everyone because money sucks and is difficult. And why just make everything easy and don't have any money? That's a dream, but you can make the dream happen if you get lucky and have a lot of people with weird ideas. Like, that's my segue into 2018 San Jose ZineCon, which was a month ago, and it was free because we had it at the library. Ricardo Padilla from Latino Comics Expo had the 2014 Latino Comics Expo at San Jose Public Library, King Library, and I just thought that was the coolest event. It was super chill. Okay, so in my day job, I'm a librarian, so I'm predisposed to like libraries and library people. But their library there, King Library, is so big because it's also part of San Jose State University's library. So they had this huge meeting room area, and that's where they had that event. So I messaged him and said, hey, you know, can you tell me, can you give me a hint on how much your budget was for this? And how can we replicate this because we want to do this again and we didn't have a venue anymore. And it turns out it's free for community events. So that's buried in the 27 minute of this podcast is that San Jose Public Library, if you reserve the rooms early enough in the year, you can get a Saturday or a Sunday, whatever you want. Tables and chairs are free included. You just got to make sure that you don't charge for anything. And we didn't want to charge for anything. So it's free. We're a community event, nonprofit organization, open to all, open access to all. And so I encourage somebody else in Zinester land or maybe in comic book land, perhaps people that like anything from any kind of alternative press or small press to also look into working with the King Library folks to make your event free and accessible to all.
And also, just like, if you're not in the Bay Area, look into your local library.
Yes.
They'll probably do the same thing.
Yes. Actually, I got this idea from Anaheim Zine Fest. Wait, no, I'm sorry. It's called Orange County Zine Fest, and it's held at the Anaheim Public Library. And same thing. It actually ends up, the library ends up benefiting for that Zine Fest. The library ends up printing tote bags and t-shirts and stickers and buttons to sell as a fundraiser. And then the Zine Fest brings in people from the community who wouldn't normally go to the library, who don't necessarily know that the library has anything for them. And then also on the benefit on the zine side, it's free, it's accessible, it's a safe space, it's a community public space. So it's, you know, all ages, welcoming, all that good stuff. Yeah, so definitely contact your local library.
The year I went to OC Zine Fest, it was in a parking garage, which was really cool.
Ooh,
yeah,
interesting.
That was a rough weekend because I went down to Tijuana Zine Fest that same weekend.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was wild. And I got a foot and a half tall ceramic Chewbacca piggy bank out of it, which was truly one of my finest purchases to date.
I love 2.5 tall ceramic Chewbacca.
Yeah.
He sounds nice.
He sat in my car for a really long time,
mm-hmm.
and then he broke, but,
yeah,
you know.
It happens.
Yeah.
But you had him for a long time.
Yeah, but OC Zine Fest was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Tijuana Zine Fest was really cool.
That's on my list. I haven't been to Tijuana yet. Long Beach Zine Fest is incredible.
Long Beach, I've told, I think, all of the organizers this, that that's one of my favorite fests.
It's incredible. You can go there. Okay, so it's in a museum, first of all. Okay, so Santa Cruz Zine Fest is also in the museum. Santa Cruz Museum of Art is small. Long Beach Museum of Art is huge.
And it's the Museum of Latin American
Yes,
Art, too.
Yes, exactly. So it's Latin American history and art. So it is educational and beautiful for the whole family.
It's
but
on
specifically,
the free day.
Yes, exactly. They make it a community event. They, the Long Beach Zine Fest organizers bring in, like, their friends' bands to play and serve food and drinks. And they have, like, a water stand so you can refill your bottle.
Long Beach Zine Fest is
tight.
Rules.
Yeah, it's tight.
Shout out. Daniel and Zeba.
Zeba is
amazing.
The best. Now, you would talk about librarians. Zeba rules. Everyone just follow Zeba. Zebra Pizza Zine, and Zeba is a librarian now at Los Angeles Public Library, but she was a librarian at Long Beach and started their zine library. Now she started one in LA. I think she started one also in Ocean Beach, perhaps. I could be wrong, but I do know that she is goals. She's librarian and zinester goals for me. I do declare.
I actually went to her library when I took my sister down to LA.
Oh, you went to Baldwin Hills, yes.
Yeah, and so we went to the Baldwin Hills Library, I took my sister to get a library card because she's trying to get one from, like, every library she can and get free ebooks.
Yes.
But we, like, posed and we hard-styled in front of the zine library, naturally.
That's
beautiful. As I do,
mm-hmm.
and as I make people do with me.
Yes.
So it was really cool to see it in person, and I had never seen, like, zines in a library in person before until, like, earlier this year or
mm-hmm,
last year,
mm-hmm.
whenever I went.
Mm-hmm. It's so cool. I love a good zine library. If we're going to transition to talking about zine libraries.
Yeah.
I'd like to plug.
Do you want to talk about organizing or plug whatever?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, so I was just trying to segue in the South Bay DIY Zine Collective.
Oh, yeah.
A zine library that a few zinesters started, actually rising from the ashes of the Think and Die Thinking Zine Library. Charisse Gutierrez approached me about taking the zines from T80T and continuing on the portable zine library that they created. And then I was talking about it excitedly with Deanna Hernandez, who at the time was working at the LGBTQ youth space in San Jose. And So she was like, well, why don't you keep the zine library at the space? And then when you want to take it out somewhere, you just come to the space and take it with you. And so there it was. The collective was born and the zine library was born. And it's completely donation based. We got our first round of donations from the first San Jose Zine Con. Just about everybody who tabled donated a zine to the library. And so, me being a librarian, I have goals for the library. It's not just like zines are cool. I want to make with I mean they are. So, but my intention with the South Bay DIY Zine Collective Library is that the zines reflect the community who uses it. So I intentionally solicit donations from communities of color, zinesters of color, and LGBTQ identified zinesters, because that's like the best zines, but also
Very
that's
true.
true, but also that's who uses the space. So it's gorgeous. It's such a great library.
Are you still doing workshops there?
Yes. Well, every month, mostly every month, we have workshops, zine making workshops. Mayra, part of Queer Anxiety Baby Zines Distro, Mayra and Kristen brought in stamp making and collage making. So we get zinesters from the community to teach workshops. Once again, I don't like to do a lot of the teaching myself because I'm not trying to gentrify zines in San Jose, but I want to give zinesters a chance to teach each other and to encourage that community and that culture to happen. And it's been really fun. I think the best attended, the most popular workshops have been poetry based. Elliot Sky Case did an amazing workshop. Ashley Andrade also did another one. Spoiler alert, both of them have agreed to do workshops again this year, so that's coming soon. And one of my goals is to start like a Patreon for the zine library, so I can start paying zinesters to do workshops, like a stipend. I would like to do that, because zinester labor is important and valuable and should be paid. The only time money is good is when you're giving it to people who need it. So, that's how I feel about that. What about organized? Did you want to know?
I selfishly wanted to segue into Queer Zine Fest, Bay
Yes.
Area Queer Zine Fest. In
Yes.
fact, I think
Yay,
I've talked
please,
about
yay.
it every episode so far, but for those of you who don't know, we both organized Bay Area Queer Zine Fest. It's happening. This is the second annual one coming up on Sunday, September 9th at Humanist Hall in Oakland. Yeah, so we're both organizing it again this year, and I wanted to talk about how San Jose Zine Con was kind of one of the things that I pulled from when I was inspired to start Bay Area Queer Zine Fest. It was definitely inspiration from Ara Jo and eBabes. eBabes is like my ultimate zine fest, and I'm in my third year organizing with them, and it feels amazing every time we meet.
East Bay Alternative Book and Zine Fair
Fest.
Fest, eBabes.
But yeah, it was inspiration from Ara and eBabes and San Jose Zine Con.
Thank you. That's really awesome. I have to say, all the credit should go to Ivy Adams.
Who also organized last year and did
Yes.
our wonderful flyer.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes.
So yeah, let's talk about Queer Zine Fest this year, if
Yes.
you wanna.
I would love to. So there's a lot of really great organizers. I am one of many helpers. But as soon as you approached me last year or put the call out, I don't know.
I
I
can't
think,
remember.
yeah, I don't remember. It's probably on the internet. That's okay though. I forgive it.
Most things I do are on the internet.
Same, that's where I'm a Viking. So once I heard about it, I was enthusiastically in, except that I live in San Jose, which is 59 miles away from Oakland. So I don't come up here very often, but when I do, it's awesome. So I help out with like behind the scenes stuff, but mostly I think my experience last year was being kind of a cheerleader.
You were an amazing cheerleader last year. I was like personally dealing with so many curveballs.
Yes.
I
forget. You're such a fucking warrior that I forget.
Yeah, I was living in San Francisco when Bay Area Caribbean Fest was just a twinkle in my eye and the eyes of so many wonderful people. Yeah, I was going through a lot of personal stuff last year, and you were really amazing with, like, keeping up morale and just, like...
Cool.
Yeah.
So, glad to help.
And I'm really happy that you're organizing with us again this year.
Yeah, me too. I am also going through a lot. I gotta say, part of my outsider experience here is coming to the Bay and realizing, wow, yeah, you're just gonna like lose your first three jobs, and that's what's happening. So I throw myself into organizing stuff and zine stuff because it makes me feel useful and knowledgeable and like I know things.
Yeah.
When my daily life is like, you don't know shit. Yes, we do.
Exact same hat.
Right. Yep. I think that you're a joy to work with, and your tenacity and your work ethic and your creativity are super fun to watch, like grow and blossom. Blossom's a weird word.
This is unprompted, and I'm not paying.
I am not paid. no, but this is so, it's so good. I'm excited to help out again this year in whatever remote cheerleading text message and or Google chat I can do.
Yeah, no, there was, I don't know, there was something else, but I was just like, I don't know if I should. And you were like, just fucking do it. And I did it.
Yeah. So really, I take a lot of that from just watching people in the Philly Zine Fest community, the organizers. I helped out the last couple of years I was in Philly. I also helped out with the Philly Feminist Zine Fest organizing. And so my experience was like, oh, who's going to lead this? And wait, it's DIY. No one leads it. It's a collective. So in that regards, on the one hand, no one's in charge, but on the other hand, everyone's in charge.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to gas each other up and just be like, wait, when you have that self-doubt, find someone else who believes in you.
Yes.
And, you know, it works out. So I guess just saying yes to stuff is a really good thing.
Especially because I feel weird taking charge of things.
Yeah.
And, like, it's definitely a community event, but yeah. I make executive decisions sometimes.
Well,
and it's like,
it was your idea. It is your vision. You've decided to make it a community event. There are people that take a zine fest and are very controlling,
that's
and
true.
You're not.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm trying very hard.
Well, and thank you, because it feels like a community event because of the, and same thing with San Jose Zine Con. I see that in you because, I also work on that too. This year, the creator of San Jose Zine Con, was wrapped up, creating her first book, Pinky and Pepper, Order It Forever, by Ivy Adams. You can order it on silversprocket.net. It's amazing. Go
it's
look
so
it up.
Good.
It's so good.
Good job, Ivy.
Yeah. So like, so she couldn't be as, organizing as she could have because of the timing of it. So I didn't want to take it over. But I also wanted it to happen. So I kind of had to, like, take it over.
Yeah.
But then, like, I made sure I asked as many people as possible to help. And Lee Patron especially stepped up. But a lot of other people helped on the day of. Kiana Flores, huge help on the day of. Mander Farrell, which people were like, oh, I don't want to volunteer. I don't want to organize. But then, like, on the day of, everything, all the tables got labeled. Everyone got shown to where they're going to sit. Tori from LA, by the way, another great zinester that stepped up and volunteered on the day of. Violet from Santa Cruz, another volunteer. So, like, make sure that you not only seek out community volunteers, but also like just continuing to check in with the group, with the with your co-organizers. You know, you always like you send out whatever decision you're making. There's always transparency, whatever, how much money, you know, that you're dealing with having to book Humanist Hall and these other types of things. That's how you make it a truly collective DIY space. And it's going to be good this year.
I send out a million emails. Mm-hmm. If you ever work with me, just know that. Because I want to be transparent as possible all the time. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to be like a shadowy figure, like pulling strings and like,
yeah.
I don't know, because it's not about me. It's about the community. It's about...
Specifically, this is an important festival because of this community, the LGBTQ community, for decades has been instrumental in keeping zines alive, in creating zines in the first place, like all the way back to the days of the mimeograph. If you want to see an incredible zine collection, the... zines at the San Francisco Public Library. There's a whole archive full of zines and chapbooks and pamphlets and self-published ephemera. And I believe that there's a whole separate section of LGBTQ community zines. Segue on that, the librarian in charge of that is Penelope Houston from The Avengers, which I think is the coolest librarian ever. Like, that's just really cool. So, yeah, to have a fest specifically highlighting the LGBTQ community in the Bay is so important. So, yeah, make it happen.
Yeah, start your own fest. Just do it.
Yes.
All it takes is hope and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And a place to have it.
Well, I think also a place to have it is a great place to start. People who want to work on it with you, so friends is very important. But also having different tasks for people to do that aren't necessarily zinesters, like, for example, all the fundraising that you've done already so far with bands. Last year, there were several shows, readings, so to do fundraisers with readings. We did one in San Jose for last year's Bay Area Queer Festival. It was actually in Santa Clara at Chromatic Coffee, chromatic.cafe if you're online. So if you do a reading, you can raise money that way. But also that gets people involved that maybe aren't necessarily making their own zines, but they're supportive. Gives them an actual demonstrative way to be supportive. And people really like that. Like, I came from it kind of thinking like, oh, I'm going to start asking for handouts. But there are so many people that are really into zines that don't necessarily see themselves as a writer or an illustrator or artist of any type, even though they all are and can be. But this is a good way to get started and get involved is to, you know, work at a coffee shop that donates coffee to the fest, et cetera. Good yep. stuff like that.
We actually had a reading last night at E.M. Wolfman in Oakland, and that was cool. That was the first pre-fest event, trying to get people pumped up. So I talked to a couple people, got them excited. We raised like $40, which literally anything helps. So,
totally.
Yeah.
You also had a zine event a couple of weeks ago for Zine of the Hill Volume 2.
Oh, yeah. So I make a King of the Hill fanzine called Zine of the Hill.
It's really good.
Pollyanna's in it.
Yeah.
And so I came out with the second issue, and I had a party at my friend's house in Oakland, and we raised money for the fest. We just had a table with donations. I put all the zines out. Buttons, we had shirts made, we donated money that we raised we screened King of the Hill on a wall, which was really cool.
So fun.
We had speakers, not people speaking, but like so you could listen to King of the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
People dressed up. We had an empty propane tank that just had best cosplay written on it in Sharpie that I was for whatever reason very proud of. We raised like $320 total. For, and we split it between Bay Area Queer Zine Fest and the Oakland LGBTQ Community Center.
That's what's up.
Because one of the other organizers, Robbie, does a lot of work with them.
Most of the time it's like, wow, look at this amazing set of resources and space here for our queer teens.
Yeah, we're trying to do zine workshops at the space. We're trying to do, which was inspired by your zine workshops, because we had a lot of fun, me and Kristen, doing ours. And so we're trying to do zine workshops, like, once a month leading up to the fest, mm-hmm. and hopefully continually after the fest.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can do some at work in Alameda. So I'm really excited about that, to get the youths of Alameda into zines.
Yeah.
We're going to try to do them in Oakland. I don't really have any connections in San Francisco anymore, so I don't know if that's happening, but can always try. Actually, wait, no, I'm leading a workshop in San Francisco in a couple weeks.
There you go.
I'm leading a workshop in San Francisco in a few weeks for some youth, and I'm really excited about that. But yeah, we want to get zines to the people all the time.
One of the most rewarding aspects of organizing, specifically San Jose ZineCon 2018, was the multitude of people that told me this was their first time tabling, much less their first time at a zine fest at all. Many of them made their very first zine ever for the occasion, and it's incredible. We had a very large group of folks. I want to say a collective that formed because of the fest, or like part of it. But they were a group of students from San Jose State University's Animation Club, the Shrunken Headman Club. I don't know what the name means, but that's the name of their club. A bunch of illustrators, beautiful comics, really just poignant stories. And it's so rewarding to have those interactions with people that found, a way to communicate their story, a way to document their what's happening with them in their own minds, and then inexpensively distribute it themselves. It's really cool. I'm into that.
I love zines.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So I was saying that I like to, as much as possible, get people from the community to lead the zine workshops. But I also give my own workshops. We take the zine library out. It's still in a pop-up kind of style. We take it out and bring it to community events, introducing the concept of a library of zines to people is really fun, and kind of like giving access to this, what is technically outsider art. You have to kind of like to find zines outside of a zine event. You have to go looking for them. And especially in the Bay Area, and especially in the year 2018 and in this accursed stolen land, it's really hard for small bookstores, independent businesses to stay open, much less have, dedicate square footage to selling zines. So there are a few though. You mentioned E.M. Wolfram in Oakland,
mm-hmm.
in Oakland, Seeing Things Gallery in San Jose, Needles and Pens in the city. There's several stores still that you can find zines.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like small independent bookstores like Pegasus. City Lights in San Francisco still does zines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's like a historical spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. I feel like we live in such a great area for zines, and being able to have access to them in person pretty like easily.
Yeah.
Which I think is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I wish that everyone had this.
Well, hopefully.
That's my life goal.
Yeah.
It's for every single person in the world.
Yeah.
To have access to zines. Maybe, you know.
Anyone can make one.
Anyone can make one. Anyone can make them.
Yes, exactly. Anyone can make more than one. And when you have a collection, when you have more than one of something, you have a collection. And then when you have a lot of something and you share it, your collection becomes a library.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We brought the library to Bay Area Queer Zine Fest. Yes. Going back to that,
mm-hmm.
we tabled at LGBTQ Nonprofit Expo in San Francisco last year, and we took the Southway DIY Zine Collective library, and people were like, what's this? I don't understand. Oh, there's a person sitting behind these, like, A-frames, and I would just pop up and be like, hello, let me tell you about these zines. Mm-hmm. And the library is cool because it's organized by, like, personal, there's feminist section, there's, do you have the actual list?
Off
the top of your head?
I actually might not off the top of my head at this point. They're color-coded, 6 colors of the rainbow. You got your Perzine, which is red, orange is fiction, yellow is poetry, green is comics and art, blue is biography and how-to, so it's like nonfiction, and purple is politics / feminism. Yeah!
Nice.
I got it.
You got it.
I got it.
Yeah, people were excited about that. I was excited about that. You were excited about that.
Yeah, it's been really fun to do something that I love and for a purpose that I love. We've been able to segue into, I don't know, once again, I feel like I'm tricking people, but I literally went to grad school to do librarianship shit, so I'm not. But I've taken the zine library to college campuses, and they've given us money, which we've then funneled back into the South Bay DIY Zine Collective, also the South Bay Foundation for All Ages Music, which is raising money to open up a venue of our own, an all ages safe space, much in the style of Holland Project in Reno or Silent Barn, RIP Silent Barn in New York. So having the library is great, but also having it mobile so we could take it places is really great. It was really, really satisfying to me to see that Zine Fest growing and changing and
evolving.
Yeah, exactly. Evolving throughout the years. This current zeitgeist that we're in is the coolest one yet, I guess. I love it. I love that we're now in an age and in a phase of our culture where we can talk about things like we need to, in this huge fun-filled fest, we need to have a spot where people can not be overstimulated and be quiet. So we're going to bring the library to the fest. And it's been, every time I've seen it done, like at this year's eBabes, the library was in the front by the couches. And I was like, God, it looks so, I just want to snuggle up there. And you can. It's great. Same thing with the South Bay DIY Zine Collection Library at Bay Area Queer Zine Fest. It was like upstairs in a loft, and it was adjacent from the makerspace where the workshops were happening. But it was like this cozy corner with couches and a reading lamp and just a bunch of zines you could just chill at for a moment. It was nice.
It was nice because, like, mm-hmm. up in the mezzanine, it was much quieter up there,
yes.
which I would think would be the opposite.
Yeah.
I feel like sound, like, heat rises. Mm-hmm. It was very hot.
It was hot.
It was very hot.
Cozy.
Yeah. It made me sleepy, but I was too anxious and caffeinated to sleep.
Yeah.
So I was just running around, sweaty, asking people if they were doing okay. Because that's what organizers should do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Always make sure that, like, and that's some of the feedback we took from last year is, like, we're going to make sure there are snacks for tablers at this year's Zine Fest. And we're going to, like, take care of lodging for people from out of town. And just, like, I don't know. I feel like organizers should accommodate the Zinesters because it's an equal, like, Zinesters are giving their work and their emotional labor and just kind of putting themselves out there. Mm-hmm. And organizers are providing the space. So it's, like, it's a give and take, but it should be equal.
Okay, so I'm really glad you brought this up. This is something I feel really strongly about. I take this from the DIY punk community, but also from growing up in hotels, because my dad worked for hotels when I was a kid. When you were holding an event, you were the host. When you go to another event, someone else's town zine fest or someone else's house party, they're hosting you. So when you're the host, You want to make sure that you are doing whatever you can, and all the things that you just mentioned are great examples of being a good host. And so some people look at it, and you can definitely look at it because it is stressful. As it's a lot of work. It's not necessarily going to be a fest where you're going to make any money personally selling your own zines, but it's not about that because you did that at the San Francisco Fest or at the LA Fest. So now those folks are coming to your town and you want to make it as fun, as relaxing, as energetic, as inspiring, and as lucrative for them as possible. So that's what a host does. You're inviting them into your home.
I was going to say, you know who does a really good job of that is the organizers from Omaha Zine Fest.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out. I love them.
Nice. I want to go to that.
I went to the first year because I saw it on Zines Agogo, the Facebook group, and they were totally, totally sweet. And they were like, hey, you can come stay at our house. And I had like never met these people or talked to them before. And it felt like there were a bunch of us crashing at one house. There were probably 8 of us. And it felt like zine summer camp. And they were so accommodating. And, you know, my flight was later in the day, like after the weekend. And they, like, took me out for breakfast and drove me around Omaha and showed me the Chef Boyardee factory. And
that's wonderful. It's actually what Ziba did for me at Long Beach Zine Fest.
Same.
Yeah. She hosted a couple of us.
We love Ziba.
Yes. But also the other organizers of Long Beach Zine Fest also were hosting folks from out of town too. But I'd never been to Long Beach until that day. Exactly. So doing whatever you can because it's been done for you, but also because it's way more fun when you're in a touring band and you're staying in hotels. They're really expensive, and then you're just passing through town. You may as well be on a business trip. But if you're actually trying to make and create and be part of culture, like, of course you want to go into someone's home. That's what a zine is about. You know, when you're
reading zines, you're like going into someone's home.
Yes.
Or like
yes.
Their brain.
There is a level of intimacy there that can, once again, you're vulnerable. You know, I could have been going to the stranger's house and it could have been creepy, but it wasn't because that's, you have conversations beforehand but also you trust. And that's what zines are about. It's a community and a culture that people are part of because of that feeling.
That's why I'm in it.
Chosen family.
That's why I still do it. That's why I got into it. That's, that's what I love about zines is the community.
Yeah.
And that's why me and the Omaha Zine Fest organizers got matching zine tattoos.
That one.
We went to Phoenix Zine Fest. We were like, we had met earlier that year. We met like 6 months before and we were like, Phoenix. And we like met up and we got tattoos and we just like hung out. And Andrea and Daphne and Caitlin, you're all wonderful people.
Yay.
Are you working on anything currently, or like, do you have anything coming up aside from Bay Area Queer Zine Fest?
That's a good question. So this weekend was the Los Angeles Zine Festival, and I really wanted to go to LA Zine Fest, and I did not. I really wanted to go to Joshua Tree Zine Fest, and I got in. I ended up not being able to afford it. That's kind of been the theme of 2018, has been a lot of like, disappointment. But that's okay because 2017 was fucking lit. So the thing that I do, I'll have to remind me that I am going to Minneapolis for the Zine Librarian Unconference.
Hell yeah.
Which is going to be amazing. I went last year in Long Beach. It was planned to be adjacent to the Long Beach Zine Fest, which was overwhelming and amazing. But so this year it's not around a zine fest. It's just the event, the conference itself. So I am going to do that. It ends up being a bunch of librarians that we swap our own zines. And I know at least one new one since last year's. Yeah, I think only the one new one, but it's my favorite zine that I've done, Identity Crisis.
It's really good.
Thank you. I really like it. I'm really proud of it. And I want to do several more. I want to do three more. The first one was kind of a theme of plants and like lots of greenery. My next one, I want to do like water, and then maybe either a fire one or an earth one, and maybe one about air, like clouds or something. I don't know. That's like my idea. I've never really, this will be, if I do a sequel, it will be my second sequel ever. I also, Gen X Garbage, I've got one and two. And I thought about doing a third one to make a trilogy of it. I'm not sure though, because I think the third one, so the first two are just screenshots of really bad dating profiles that I encountered on Tinder, Bumble, Plenty of Fish. And then the first one, it focuses on, oh God, it's so bad. It's racist Halloween costumes being used as dating profile pictures. It's bad. And then you just like swipe through the zine. It's like you're when you flip the pages of the zine, it's supposed to remind you of swiping left on Tinder. And then the second Gen X Garbage is sexually aggressive messages from men to me on these dating sites. It's just really bad. It's garbage. And then so the third one, I wanted to maybe write a little bit about my experiences, because the first two, I didn't really write anything. It was kind of presented without comment, like let these guys, I did of course comment on the end, because of course I want to comment, but presented just as they were. And then I think the third one, I don't want to have any, but once again, I don't know. I'm kind of in a nebulous, like I'm planning these things out. Reader, call in if you're interested in any of these zines. So, oh, I also have Team Swami zine. I was going to try and finish the third one. Team Swami zine is my first, I guess, submission-based editorial zine, where I solicited from the fandom, Swami Records and Rocket from the Crypt fandoms, solicited words and images, stories about people's fandoms about these bands from the Swami Records label out of San Diego, California. I've known some of these people for over 20 years on the internet. The Rocket Forum, I believe, started in 1997, 98, something like that. 98. And yeah, it's been 20 years now. Wow. Anyway, I want to do the third one in time for the Hot Snakes show that happened last week, but that didn't happen. So that means that I've missed that deadline, so I can just do it whenever.
Nice.
Yeah, so I have plans. I just don't really have any inspiration to, like, I have to finish this by then right now, which is a change of pace for me. I usually feel like I need to like always be working on something. I think it's because I have so much other shit in my life right now that's like doing shit that I'm kind of like, oh. What about you? What are you working on?
Let's see. I just finished Zine of Hell 2, which took me almost a year to finish.
It's hard to finish those ones that other people contribute to.
Yeah.
God.
But speaking of contribution zines, I'm putting together a series of zines about karaoke, which I'm super pumped for, because if you've ever met me, I've probably talked your ear off about karaoke within like 5 minutes of meeting you. I'm taking submissions for Karaoke Zine Volume 1. Submissions are due July 8th. I want to have it ready for Portland Zine Symposium at the end of July. I'm working on Queer Zine Fest. Pretty much it right now. I like haven't really been inspired to write, but I was writing a lot of poetry this last semester because I was in class. So I want to get back into writing poetry. I'm not working on much right now. Everything's kind of up in the air. But that's life.
Yeah. I think sometimes the idea that you need to put a zine out for every fest you go to, you don't necessarily have to, but for me, I use them as deadlines.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I use them as, and I mean, ultimately, the thing that really gets me going is knowing that people will trade me their zines for mine. And then I'm like, yes, I have to finish. Oh my God, I need to get the new, any of them, the new Zine of the Hill. Yes. So I do that. It's okay to bring your old zines. It's fine.
Yeah.
Because you've always met people that have never read your stuff before.
I actually brought a bunch of zines out of retirement for Dear Diary Zine Fest. Because I haven't written, like, a solid per zine in a while. Mm-hmm. It's been, like, a couple months. But I used to exclusively write per zines. And so I used to do this series called Perpetual Nervousness.
Yes. I love that series.
Thank you. I kind of miss it. But I've, like, moved on to other things. Mm-hmm. I'm a very different person from when I was writing that. So it was cool to like reread. It was cool and cringy to read things that I wrote when I was like 24 and, you know, first kind of starting the gender journey and just kind of like trying to figure my shit out. It's not like I have it figured out now, but I'm in a very different place with all of that. So it's like, it was cool to see how much I've grown as a person in the last 4 years. So, that's what I'm working on.
I can't wait to read it.
Do you have anything else?
Yes, there is something else I want to talk about and plug. Cheers from the Wasteland is back. They're doing a call for submissions for the next issue, which is transportation themed. So if you are in the sound of my voice, if you can hear my voice and you have a story about transportation in the city of San Jose or the surrounding region, consider submitting your story or art to cheersfromthewasteland.com.
I'll post the link too.
Yeah, post the link. It is my favorite website on the internet besides I don't know what besides. I was trying to make a joke and I just lost the plot there. But it's a really good website and a really good zine.
I've got a couple things to plug aside from things I've already plugged. That's not really a plug. It's more like news. Long Arm Stapler is now available on the iTunes store. So that's cool.
You might already be there.
You might already be on the iTunes store. I don't know if it's still called that. It might be like Apple Music or I don't know. We're available outside of just the like website that hosts this podcast. So that's really cool and exciting. Karaoke zine, which I already talked about. I'm taking submissions on a rolling deadline, but if you want to be in the first one, you gotta submit by July 8th. I think that's it. I'm really glad that we were finally able to do this.
Me too. We've been trying to for a moment.
We've been trying to since like
you started.
January.
Yeah.
May 26th.
Finally, we did it. It
finally happened.
We did it.
Yay.
I want to give a shout out to Deanna Hernandez. Her first zine ever is called Ugh, Finally.
It's great.
It's amazing. It's one of my favorite things in life because I'm a librarian is stuff that's about stuff. It's called Metadata. It's a zine about making zines. And I think that's so cool. It's hilarious and really good. And it's her first ever zine. I'm really proud of her.
I don't want to toot my own horn. But I went over to her house.
We sent her the girl thing. Such an asshole. I totally forgot that you helped her.
Oh, no. I just think it was funny because, like,
it was awesome. That was the best selfie.
I went over to Dan's house and she was going to make a zine for San Jose Zine Con.
Mm-hmm.
And she had never made a zine before. And I was just like, yeah. And so we just, like, worked. She made me dinner, which was really nice. Shout out to Diana. She made me dinner, and we worked on a zine, which she ended up not going with, but because what her, like, finished product was amazing. Aww, when I have hair. So we sent Pollyanna a selfie because we were so proud and wanted to share it with her.
And I am showing the screenshot from that day because Lee from Cheers from the Wasteland and I were working on ZineCon stuff that same time. So it was like zine masterminds texting each other. It was nice.
It was very nice.
Yeah. Honestly,
screenshot that and send it to me and I'll put it up.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Long Arm Stapler, a podcast about zines. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, if you want to be on the podcast, shoot me an email at longarmstapler@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter @longarmstapler. And yeah, get at me because I would love to talk to you about zines. All right, bye.